This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, a look at the Incline Incubator. But first, in April 2001, Cincinnati experienced 3 days of protests and riots sparked by the shooting death of Timothy Thomas, an unarmed 19-year-old African-American, by Cincinnati police officer Stephen Roach. Next month, Xavier University is going to host a town hall meeting, 15 years later, the Cincinnati riots and the future of the city, to reflect on what we've learned and the progress we've made since the social unrest and riots of 2001, and discuss what the future might hold for our city. Joining us for a preview of 15 years later are community activist Iris Rowley, attorney Al Gerhard Stein, and Xavier University professor of philosophy, ethics, religion, and society, Dr. Gabe Gottlieb. Now, Iris and Al were both involved in the creation of the Cincinnati Collaborative Agreement that was enacted in 2002. And you can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Gabe, Iris, and Al, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Glad to be here.
Gabe, why is there a need to keep this aspect of Cincinnati's history out there?
Well, I think it's important to really keep this present and because these events don't happen in a vacuum. The things that happened in 2001 happen in a context. And we see across the U.S. similar things happening in other cities. So it's important to contextualize historically what's happened, the riots and rebellion and protests in Cincinnati. There are things to be learned from them. There are things that have been learned from them. And I think we have to keep those lessons in mind, and we also need to be critical. There might be ways to improve, to be more concrete, to have better practices. If we're not looking back historically and understanding what happened, I think it will be much harder to do that.
Well, at least we have a narrative here. I mean, one of the things that Iris and I have been working on for the last 15 years is ensuring that there not be a repeat and of the conditions that led to the social unrest. And that means that in August of 2002, we entered into the collaborative agreement, and that had a commitment to bias-free policing that was strictly regulated. There was a overhaul of the use of force rules for the city of Cincinnati, the importation of tasers, and there was also a lot of work done on accountability so that there'd be early warning system, there'd be a robust internal investigation section, and a citizens' complaint authority. All of those things were in place in order to prevent this from happening. And then, of course, the biggest thing was a change in philosophy, a commitment to problem solving. And that's what we've been working on in order to make sure that Cincinnati's a different place now than it was back then.
And in addition to what Al said, it's always the responsibility to continuously educate communities on what actually happened and where we were so that we don't go backwards, as the professor said, and that we continue to have input and understand rights, roles, and responsibilities just to be a great citizen, an involved and engaged taxpayer, and understanding how all these things intersect. One of the things that that Al mentioned, the methodology around problem solving using the SEER process, is something that I think we hope that we just would not use for police, that process can be used for different systems throughout the city. So I'm grateful that we've been able to sustain our voices and keep it out there, and people are very interested. But it's very important that communities understand their rights, roles, and responsibilities.
I think also part of keeping this going and talking about it and thinking about it is there's always the educational component, particularly with something like problem solving. The community needs to understand what that is, how it works, and part of having these conversations is educating the community and broadly about what problem solving is.
Can I do a Cliff Note version of that?
Sure.
So reactive policing is what we were responding to. And that's where you can use all the high tech you want and identify a hotspot. And then once you know that there's a lot of crime going on at that location, you swoop down. We used to have a Vortex unit with your 50 Vortex officers and arrest everybody in sight. And then the community says for the next 15 minutes, we are crime free. And meanwhile, you've arrested everybody that breathes, and they're all black. And they have different levels of criminal culpability, many of which have none. And you make everybody angry, and you don't do anything to get at the root of the problem. Now, what we did with problem solving is say, all right, that's a hot spot. Why? Why is it a hot spot? Let's talk to the guy who owns that piece of property. Let's talk to the contiguous landowners. Let's look at highway maintenance and ask about the traffic patterns, if there's drugs going on there, if it's got lighting that's screwed up and it's making it attractive for people to hide in the corners, if the doors aren't hard. There's lots of things that can be done in a creative way to eradicate that as a location that's attractive to crime. That's the kind of work we're doing to prevent crime and reduce arrests while keeping the community safe. That's hard. It's boring because it's tedious and it's not exciting like cowboys and it's not arresting bad guys, but it's good stuff and it works.
Is it more effective for the long-term out?
Absolutely.
Are other departments around the country adopting the problem solving?
Talk to Iris, who just went to the problem solving convention in Oregon.
Absolutely. And, Cincinnati, I don't think that we realize in a big scope how impactful we've been to other cities and other communities and other police municipalities. There was one particular agency, and I think it was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I'm texting Al saying, these folks have just soared based off of our foundation. And people mentioned Cincinnati and how they got to where they're thinking. When you ask Al about long term, and I'll bring it all to scope for you, is a black community inside of Milwaukee that had been left out of resources and just, you know, the black flight, white flight, responsibility of its legislators. It's called Washington Park. Crime written down 20 years later, it's just so much crime. The people are fed up. They don't know what to do. Well, everybody came together based off of Cincinnati's problem solving model. DA, police, who are the people that build the housing? How am I forgetting them? HUD. Not HUD, but the ones that do it house by house. Habitat for Humanity. And other city municipalities and resources came together and said, let's rebuild Washington Park by the street. Not one house at a time, but by the street. And so let's help people become quality citizens. Let's go in and bring the wraparound services. Let's understand what really has happened and let all of us take responsibility in rebuilding and making sure that the children understand, because at the beginning of each morning, we have children that we have to build and look out for. Let's make sure that the children understand that everybody is working for them. So they go in, they are rebuilding street by street. They're not just trying to go in and arrest everyone, but they let the community know you have some people in this community that are on our radar and we just simply can't do anything but arrest them. They have done this deed. We've been watching them. But for everybody else that wants to participate, we're going to do this. And that is what I see when I go out and I'm talking to people and I'm talking to the community people first so that to see if they understand our model. People want our model, but they want the people too. So they're, you know, we're saying to Al, how do we, because Al is the attorney for everybody all over the world. I said, well, just call Al. he can handle it. But if not, help the attorneys understand how to structure these things. So yes, there are many, many communities that are using problem solving, the Sierra process, utilizing how we got to where we are now and trying to make sure that they can just springboard from where they are into the stratosphere.
Iris, tell me about the role that you played in bringing about the collaborative agreement. And Al, I ask you the same thing. What was your role in that?
You go first, Al.
Well, let me tell you what Iris's role was, because Iris was a officer of the Black United Front.
Oh, my goodness.
This was an organization that needed to be loud and clear and creative with the black community, stepping out ahead of some of the more traditional organizations. They collected 400 stories that we used as witnesses, as affidavits. We handed it over to the DOJ when the DOJ came to investigate, and Iris and the other leaders, including Reverend Damon Lynch III, have continued to just stay present and inspire the black community to cooperate in this very long-term effort. and she's been an inspiration, and she's not been paid, and that's a problem. And it's and I really admire Iris, and everybody else should too.
You have a mutual appreciation club going, don't you?
Oh well, you know, we couldn't.
You've
have
worked
done
together
it
a lot,
oh,
though.
Yeah, we could not have done it without our. We call them our dream team. Without our attorneys, and we could not have done this with Al and Scott coming to us with 30 years, because, you know, I don't know if you realize that he walked around with these binders of 30 years of blue panel ribbons of best practices and how to get better. And when he came to us, he said, no, we've been watching this thing. We have some stuff to do. Let us help you. And at first we were like, no, we need it for people to see policing from the black lens. And that is very, very critical. And it's not that African Americans and or black people don't want to be safe and they don't want to call the police when things are happening. It's a duel. So if I call the police, I may become the victim twice. Right. So how do we fix that? And so Al came to us many times saying, hey, let us help fix this thing with you. But we had to be self-determined enough to say we wanted to fix it. And the community said, go fix it.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation. And Iris, just how challenging was it to create the collaborative agreement?
It was and still is very challenging to...
Challenging to make it, challenging to keep it going.
Yeah, and challenging to keep it because, you know, we're on our third mayor, fourth mayor, fourth police chief. And as municipalities, as these people change, you come in with different ideas. We need for the reforms to become transitions. And so it needs to be so deeply embedded that no matter who the chief is or who the mayor is or who the chair of law and public safety is, that everybody understands, that citizens understand that we only want this model to get better. We want to make sure that the community is engaged and thriving and making sure that they are involved in their police, in their communities, because it is community-based.
We're excited about the new chief. We think he gets it, and he's going to do a good job of moving problem-solving forward. And the real challenge is to return to the community and make sure that they're fully engaged.
Absolutely.
We have a partnering center that needs full funding, or some type of other vehicle has to be in place to fully engage the community. That's why I'm hopeful that the Xavier Forum will help in reigniting some community engagement, because that's the piece that the police are finally ready to really do. And we're always struggling to figure out how to get as many people involved as possible.
Yeah.
And in concept, it's not a problem, because every problem that the police tackle needs community partners. So it's not that we don't know what people are supposed to do. It's just that we have to get them plugged in.
Right. And Xavier has a history working on these issues going back to 2001. Father Graham was involved in the CAN Commission, which was a commission of folks that were brought together to address and think about the root causes, and also to develop some kind of resources and ways to address broadly the kinds of issues of poverty, policing, and so on that are at the root of what happened in 2001, but are still at the root of why there is crime. I think that's a really important issue, the poverty dimension of this as well, that there are really two issues to think about. One is policing, and one approach to that is problem solving. But another issue is economic equity and poverty and economic inequality. And those two, I think, are really deeply coupled, and understanding how those are coupled is something that needs to be a part of that, of these conversations.
So what is going to happen at the forum that will answer Great. That? Because when people bring up poverty, that almost is an excuse for doing nothing, because nobody feels
Exactly.
empowered to solve it. So what can we do at the forum to actually make that an action item?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think so. Let me just say something really briefly about the forum that's happening at Xavier. We're having a town hall meeting on February 2nd to discuss these issues. Al will be there, Iris will be there, along with Reverend Damon Lynch and Maris Harold from the police department. And I think this is something Reverend Damon Lynch is really passionate about. There are lots of ways to address the economics of this. One is addressing it in communities and coming up with solutions that work for communities, rather than addressing it, here's a program for the entire city, but locating what communities need economically to progress and survive.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us with a preview of 15 Years Later, The Cincinnati Riots and the Future of the City, community activist Iris Rolle, attorney Al Gerhardstein, and Xavier University professor of philosophy, ethics, religion, and society, Dr. Gabe Gottlieb. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Allison in Price Hill. Hi, Allison.
Hi, I'm Allison Reynoldsberry. I'm the director of the Intercommunity Justice and Peace Center in Over the Rhine. And we just last week held an event in collaboration with the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, where more than 150 people came out to address a topic that we're calling Rethinking Racism. And one of the things that we really found encouraging about that is that people are hungry for this conversation, that the riots and the collaborative agreement happened 15 years ago, but there's so much more work that still needs to be done. And one of the things that I think Al mentioned was the need for community engagement, and that there are some suggestions that you all have of how the community can continue to be involved. And one thing that I would just hope for, I guess, in the forum or afterwards, and something that we're looking at, is that community voices are continued to be held up, that that was something that was important 15 years ago, and I hope is something that will be incorporated into the work now.
Is there something we can read? Is there a product that came out of your dialogue that we can carry forward?
Sure. You know, we're working on putting all the notes together and putting it up on our website. And at this point, we're really working from an open space format. So the folks who were gathered at the event are the ones who are deciding what is worked on moving forward. And so, you know, there's a lot of big systemic issues that need to be addressed. You know, policing is just one piece of that, right?
Right.
And so looking at the criminal justice system, looking at how we as individuals relate to one another, how we address racism in ourselves and our communities. And so I guess just wondering how you would factor that into the work that you all are
and
doing.
Allison, you said you had 150 people show up for this.
Right, and more who wanted to come and couldn't be there. So it was really encouraging.
Is Cincinnati rather unique in this, that a lot of people want to get involved in dealing with these problems, Iris?
I think that it is what Cincinnati has done, at least for the last 15 years, of gotten involved and want to talk and want to come up with the appropriate responses to the appropriate themes. And Allison, I just want to say thank you for doing that. I wanted to come, but was attending another function. But one of the good things about the collaborative is that all those things that you just mentioned, and when the professor talked about Cincinnati Action Now Can, that was put in place to address those other issues, what you talked about in your meeting, all those other systems that are plagued by the same things that we said the Cincinnati Police Department was plagued by. And so the collaborative gives you the springboard to use the process of problem solving, of using the SARE process to think outside of the box on how to fix it. Oftentimes we get in the room or begin to dialogue more about what you believe the problem is. And oftentimes when we get in the room, we come with the same lens. And I know that you use the open forum kind of conversation, but there has to be some structure to that so that you can effectively and efficiently come up with some type of next steps and next actions. Anytime you want to talk about this process, I'm available. Al's available. Reverend Lynch is available. The police department should be available to talk about this in a manner of not enforcement, but how do we use this process to create policies and procedures so that people can engage policing in the appropriate way.
Iris, how effective do you think the collaborative agreement has been? For example, with what happened with Sam DuBose, even though that wasn't Cincinnati police, it was the UC Police Department. How effective was that collaborative agreement at providing a model and a cushion for keeping things in check when that happened?
Well, there are several things that let me say this, that Sam DuBose was a travesty.
Yes.
Should have never happened. The university, ICS, what's the name of the school? Am I getting right? ICS. Institute for Crime Sciences.
Oh, right, right.
They are involved with our SERVE initiative. They are the people who collect the data, who look at the trends, who help come up with solutions of how crime is, committed, and then how the police should respond. That was horrible. It was a very horrible, despicable act that occurred on our watch. To find out at that time that there was a memorandum of agreement with the city and the university where the UC police could police in that manner, of which I didn't know, and I thought I had my finger on the pulse. I don't know how many people knew that, but just those things alone for me was despicable. I just didn't understand how this could go on in this particular way.
Well, I was one of the attorneys for the DuBose family, and I can tell you that it is it's good that we've been able to resolve that matter, but it also opened the door to all the work that needs to be done to make sure that policing in the campus area is consistent with the principles that Iris and I are talking about under the collaborative. That hadn't been happening. It better start happening, and some pieces are in place to make it happen, and that's a good thing. But to go back to the forum on justice and discussion about racism, at First Church, Unitarian Church in Cincinnati, we're in the middle of, and we're struggling with this same thing. All right, how do our congregants participate, get engaged with the community to resolve some of these issues? And right now, there's an active partnership going on. There are people who will be accompanying witnesses to court because there's a lot of intimidation of witnesses and people need to stand up together. There is an effort to identify landlords that need to be hounded because they're doing a bad job of maintaining their property and people are going to stand up to them. There are school tutor opportunities in Avondale. There's IHN, which provides housing for homeless people. And so we're developing a list of action items that involve police and don't involve police, that involve a wide variety of things that will address both poverty and policing. And I think more work on that with interracial teams doing it will move us forward.
I think also just thinking about racism more broadly and how it affects policing is the issue of implicit biases. Mm-hmm. And an implicit bias is basically an unconscious bias that we might have for people who have a particular skin color, but it could be sexual orientation or weight. You can have implicit biases of all these varieties. There's a lot of psychological research illustrating that implicit biases are pervasive. And if they are pervasive and we have a preference for white skin, that can affect deeply how policing works and the kinds of decisions that police officers make, regardless of what principles they're supposed to follow.
Right.
Those biases can unknowingly influence their behavior.
Right.
And that's I think in terms of addressing racism within ourselves, we have to think deeply about that and how those biases affect policing is also something that needs to be on the table and discussed. And, one might wonder what problem solving can do in that respect to mm-hmm. handle these kinds of implicit biases.
Did you want to say something?
Well, only that one of the best tools that mitigates the danger of implicit bias is not to go around arresting people for stupid stuff, missing license plates, cracked bumpers. It's when you do that sort of blanket policing that the onus of that enforcement effort falls on people of color. And if we save our arrest tool for people who've actually committed real crimes that need to be separated from society, then the implicit bias that most people have won't play out with an abuse of power. And that's an important part of problem solving.
And then the other piece, I knew I was going to say something, the other piece to that, Professor, is that currently what CPD has allowed citizens to do is to be part of interviewing processes. And so that's whether it's lateral, new recruits. And although you can't identify the implicit biases there, but you are able as a community person to come in with a different lens as opposed to just being police interviewing potential police officers. And so some of those things that you talked about, you're able to kind of discuss and see as you look at people, where are you coming from? There was one guy that was coming from somewhere northern Northern Ohio. So tell me about the people you've policed before, farmers and non-farmers. Now, is he a bad guy? No. But has he been exposed to the urban core? Definitely not. He may not fare very well in the city, even with all of those policies and procedures that should guide him down the correct path.
Iris, what about the attitudes of young people, 18-year-olds who live in the urban communities who might not remember what happened in 2001?
Well, and not what happened locally in 2001, but every day see what's happening across the nation with the click of a button on their smartphones. And every day they see another extremely horrible interaction with police and thinking that, well, maybe I don't know what they're going through in Cincinnati, but they certainly see it in someplace else. And could this and does this happen to them here in the city? It only compounds the problem. It only makes that interaction even worse. So we have to stay with them. This is one of the things that I'm hoping that we can move forward, not just with the town hall session, but with the conference that we're planning in April. It is our 15th anniversary. And we're going to go back and look at exactly where we were, where we are, and how we can move forward. And hopefully the young folks will come out and give us what they are experiencing. And we know that inside of CPD, we're having some issues now with the arrest of young people. I think it was reported 6,000 youth are being arrested a year. And whether that is coming from schools or resource officers or court ordered or parents or people in the community, those are the people that I want to get to, because not every child is doing a policeable offense. Who owns what that child is doing, and how can we use problem solving to make sure that they get on a better path?
So 6,000 locally arrested each year, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's what's being reported by Hamilton County Juvenile Courts.
513-419-7100, and let's talk with Charles in Mount Washington. Hi, Charles.
Hello.
Go right ahead. You're on.
Hi, I was just curious about, you see, in situations such as this with the policing and the arrest of the black youth, the African-American youth, I feel as though that there's a responsibility on both sides. And I'm wondering, with all this dialogue that's happening, and it's great, mind you, but how much of the emphasis is put on the responsibility of the citizen, of the community? Because, not for nothing, but a lot of times when our youth, I'm a black man myself, when our youth engage in activities that are actionable, that promote the police interaction, how much of that is our fault and how much of that is the police's fault? Because what happens in my perspective is that when you do something, whether you're driving without a license or you have a minimal amount of marijuana in the car or whatever else, that opens the floodgates for the improper policing. And I mean, how much of this is our responsibility to keep our youth out of this kind of the trick bag, so to speak?
So let me push back on you. What would you want? What do you want to happen?
Well, what I would like to see happen is a lot more responsibility on the parents and the community for our own children, because a lot of times we engage in all of this this community uprising and having all these protests and so forth, when we could have very easily kept our children out of the situation.
Well, you just said something. Wait a minute, hold on, because I want to back you up. I want to help you get to where we are. So you said the responsibility of parents, and then you said we. So you went from parents to we, because if I'm listening to you, you can be my age and or a little older, where we were the community. And we, the community, made sure that children, whether their parents were around, whether their parents had parenting skills or not, whether their parents had a job, whether it was two parents in the household, whether they lived upstairs or downstairs, didn't matter. The standard in the community was much higher. So if, in fact, and we're talking about children, if, in fact, we're talking about the children, it is all of our responsibilities to make sure, because children do stupid stuff. We all did.
Exactly.
Some of us just didn't get caught, right? So for the ones
exactly.
So we want to make sure that children are treated fairly. We want to make sure that treatment, sentencing, policing is fair. It is unfair to have 6,000 black youth, and most of them aren't doing anything. They're being children. So whose role is it outside of policing is the appropriate question to make sure that children have the opportunity, children have the proper education, children have the proper nourishment, despite who their parents may be. Is that not part of your role, so or not?
I think also
as a parent and as a godparent, that is my role, regardless of whether I want it to be or not. That when you bring children into this world, we have children, it is our adult responsibility to at least engage these children, engage these youths, and let them know that there's a different path.
And make sure that systems that are in their lives are appropriate and connected enough and responsible enough that the children get what they need to grow up to be capable connecting adults.
Hey, Charles, we have to move along, and we really appreciate the phone call very much.
Thank you,
Charles. Thank you so much.
Come and see us on the 2nd.
Gabe, again, give us the date, the location, the town hall meeting. We know two of the speakers, obviously.
Sure,
tell us who everybody's going to be talking on that day. And
great.
Give us the details again.
So the details are this. On February 2nd at Xavier University in the CentOS Center, we'll hold a town hall meeting. It will begin at 7 p.m. It's open to the public. No tickets are required. And it's going to be moderated by Donna Jones-Baker, who's at the Urban League. And in addition to Iris and Al, Captain Maris Harold, who works for the Cincinnati Police Department, will be there, and Reverend Damon Lynch III, talking about 2001, but also about what's going on today, how things are currently, and where really I think the pressing question is, where do we need to go in the future?
And you can find a link to more information about that town hall at WVXU.org. And Gabe, Iris, and Al, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Community activist Iris Rowley, attorney Al Gerhard Stein, and Xavier University professor of philosophy, ethics, religion, and society, Dr. Gabe Gottlieb. Coming up, a look at a new program to create jobs and grow businesses in the urban core. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.